Hi folks, this is Martin with Kaput Radio. In today's program, I'd like to present a slice of Nimbin's reality on a Sunday afternoon at a place devoted for 20 years of permaculture. There are a couple of songs and an interview. First up, a song performed by Barry, a local Aborigine, followed by an interview with Mooks, a longtime activist and musician, who also happened to be at the recent protest against a coal seam gas company threatening farmland at Bentley, about which I made a podcast in the last show, Kaput Radio number 277. And finally, a little jam with Barry and Mooks, with a background of people joining in a circle of unifying energy through song and dance. Stay tuned. I'm sitting here with Mooks. Good day, Mooks. You just played a song with Barry together, and Barry got called out in the end of the song.
It was pretty funny. We started off playing a duet, and in the middle of a rock and roll solo, Barry's phone went off, and he took off like a shot into the bushes.
Social media.
And ended up playing it on my own. But it's all right. I guess you get that.
Yeah. Mooks, I heard you earlier talking about you've been in Bentley doing music over there and got some impression. Can you tell us a little bit about what was going on there for international listeners out there?
Well, music had two identities, really. There was the music at the gate, which was usually anthemic and uppish and good messages and easy for crowds to sing. The secret of those situations is you want a communion, not a performance. So with things like "There Will Be Peace on Earth" or Luke Vassallis' "Gently Bentley," "Let's Walk Gently on the Hallowed Grounds of Bentley." He wrote that specifically for crowds to sing, and so did Chris Fisher. Wrote a wonderful one called "Hand in Hand," which we're now. It's going to be the lead song on a CD that we're getting together of the songs that we played at Bentley. The songs I tend to sing were, I've been a long time kind of anthem writer. And you write anthems with long phrases so people can sing together on a big long note. They like to get up there and hold a big note together. And if it's a simple song, it's easy to learn and people are confident doing it. So that's a really important thing. The other part of the music spectrum there was around the fires at night and around logging. That got to be absolutely unbelievable on some occasions. It's just the first couple of weeks there was a lot of young blokes in playing their own sort of post Tim Buckley and Tim Buckley's son sort of modern stuff that is way away from the things that I write, which are kind of traditional 3-4 chord things with a chorus and a verse. And I'd be sitting there with my 5-string banjo, which is essentially a folk instrument that stays in the one key, and you know, it's that's what it is. And they'd be playing these things, and I'd wonder how I could join them. So sometimes I would just find 3 notes with my left hand, put them on the keyboard, on the fretboard, and find 3 notes that worked with what the guy was singing, and then just did complicated picking to it. And we got some amazing... I just lifted myself into new areas of music I hadn't been in before. I was feeling like Bela Fleck half the time. I was just playing this really simple little thing, but my right-hand picking's, you know, pretty good. So that was sort of just going repetitive across these patterns that these kids were playing. That went on for about 2 weeks, different guys coming and going. And people would leave and more people would come. One night I came down from Gate A and there was a young bloke and a young woman playing gypsy jazz. And it was, for all the world, it was the hot club of Paris. It was Stephen Grappelli and Django Reinhardt. The guitar was chum 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 chum, and the fiddle was just going there. And I walked up behind these 2 young people, and they were sitting, and I was sort of standing between them from behind and looking down at both their instruments and admiring their expertise. And they went for about 10 minutes. And I thought, well, they've obviously been playing together for a long time. It's just so good. And when they finished, she turned to him and said, "That was great. What's your name?" They hadn't met each other before. It was just phenomenal. And the woman turned out to be none other than Laura Taggart. Laura Taggart, and she was at a lot of the morning gigs and a lot of the sessions and stuff. And she's quite a well-known local identity. She's a really, really wondrous musician. There doesn't seem to be any style at all she can't play. So that was the first time I sort of got introduced to her. Was that there's these two playing this music that was the first time they'd ever done it, and it was just, and that was going on a lot. Young people coming and going. There's a band of there's a local band called Black Train who do the markets, and they sing a lot of a spiritual country, like "Will the Circle Be Unbroken" and beyond, into those sort of some of those Jesus-y sort of songs, and angels coming and getting me sort of, and they do it with tongue in cheek. And I got to play 5-string banjo with them a couple of times. That was absolutely marvelous. There were lots of other jams with other people that didn't involve me that just got off the ground. But probably the most remarkable thing was one night I was near the end. I think it was after we'd been told that it was that we'd won, for the time being anyway. A bloke sat next to me and we were having dinner, and he was raving away about twittering and tweeting. And he said, "Oh, I've got my bass with me too. I might have a play later." And I didn't take much note of it, so I didn't think much about what a bass player might be able to do there, you know. So I sat around till it got dark and by the fire. Somewhere along the line, about half an hour later, this electronic music just rose up from beside the fire. Like, it sounded like a cello trio, but it had warm reverbs and things around it, so I knew it was coming through speakers, you know, I knew it wasn't live. And I thought someone had turned a stereo on. Anyway, some torches went on, and there was this fellow with his double bass, and he had a rig on the floor with enough pedals. It looked like a little airport in the dark with all the lights going on and off. And he was playing the bass, but right up high off the black part of the neck, just right just near the bridge. So accurate. I couldn't believe the tiny little movements of his fingers would change chords. And he was playing up in the cello range. And he had loops, and he had reverbs, and he had phasing, and he had all sorts of flanging and all sorts of things coming in and out. He'd put a loop up that was a cello trio, sort of going dun 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 dun, and set a pattern up. Then he played something a bit more fluid, over the top of that, and let those two sort of go raging off, and brought in a drum machine of some sort, and then started playing lead cello over the top of that, and the whole place was just mesmerised for about an hour. No one could move. You've never heard anything like this bloke. Mm-hmm. And there was a young drummer down the front, picked up his bongo drums and was about to start, and I sort of bit my tongue because a lot of those young blokes that had been playing drums there weren't all that very good. Anyway, he sat in beautifully with this man. He underplayed, and just the guy looked up and smiled, so that began to be a nice little thing. And then Megan James went and got her flute, and she stood there a little bit self-consciously at first for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then picked the flute up and sat in with this guy, and this whole thing just grew right there and then. It was absolutely wonderful. And then we went on for about a quarter of an hour, and then the bloke had been playing for about an hour then, so I think he sort of packed up and left, and we never saw him again. But it was like a requiem. The stuff he played was like these beautiful stringy things that were celestial and went everywhere and nowhere and all at once, and I felt it was like some angelic requiem for all the, and putting to bed all the fear and angst and worry and whatever people had been carrying silently and strongly for all those weeks.
Sort of what sort of the music, was it sort of a unifying element?
Yes, it was. Sense? It was very unifying, Martin.
Because the political dimension are enormous, aren't they?
Yeah.
As you just mentioned, you played in the US with Native American music involved or something?
Yeah, I did. I did some. I was fortunate enough to get involved in a Native American set of rituals in the Woodstock.
Yeah, right,
while I was there.
Oh, Woodstock.
Yeah.
So less well-trodden ground.
Yeah, sure is.
Anyway, I don't want to keep you up from joining the jam.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. I won't be joining.
I'm not into the music itself so much as I'm interested in the people power, what it sort of did there and what happened there.
I'm a student of Pete Seeger's. You know, I got to play with Pete Seeger in America.
And
I've been following him since I was a young bloke. I used to go to this record shop in Melbourne when I was a young bloke. I'd have been about 16 or 17, right, and buy all these black vinyls by black guys, Huddy Leadbetter, Leadbelly, Big Bill Brunsey, who wrote that song I sang before, Brownie McGee, Sonny Terry, these kind of guys, and they were playing those kind of blues, those 12-bar blues that I still play to this day.
And that's the element where the whole audience can take part when the song is structured simple?
No, not particularly. That's a very personal sort of thing. What happened was that bloke that owned the record store said, "You seem to like all these black artists. Have you ever listened to a white guy called Pete Seeger?"
Yeah.
And I said, "No, I'm not really into white music, I like the black funky stuff." And he said, "Well, take this record home. If you don't like it, you can bring it back and I'll put it on your account." So it was Pete Seeger with the Weavers.
All right, yeah.
By the end of the year, I owned all the Weavers, 15 of their vinyls, and Pete Seeger records. I had the Pete Seeger songbook, and I had the Pete Seeger How to Play the Five-String Banjo book, which I still got. It was printed on recycled paper in 1961. This is how far ahead of the rest of the world these people were, you know. His book was full of internationalist stuff, which is why he got jailed later. There were photos of people of different colours and races on every second page. There were songs in 14 different languages. The man was an inspiration to me. So I went to see him in 1962 at the Melbourne Town Hall. And I totally fell in love with the way he just brought the audience into every song. He wasn't interested in being the star of the show. He wanted everyone to have a really good time personally. And the way he got them singing harmonies, and the way he did, and this whole super friendly, gentle, laid-back manner. "Oh, Colin, you could do better than that," and all this sort of stuff, and just coaxing people out of their shells. Yeah. And I learned a lot. And so I've been doing that for a long, long time. And I combined that with when I came to Nimbin first in 1977. I started, myself and my partner started doing sort of music with groups. We put up signs around town for a folk club and a choir.
Mm.
And 33 people turned up to the choir. I think there was 30 women and 3 blokes, which is about right. That's about the normal. Anyway.
Well, it was about tree savings then, wasn't it? 78 protests,
yeah, yeah,
and
Mount
Marty and rescuing the
trees. Well, it got into being a folk club, and, yeah. And when you stand up in front of a bunch of people or around a campfire and that, and you go to sing something in common,
yeah.
You suddenly realise that Australia doesn't have the legacy that most other countries have got, you know.
Uh-huh.
No matter where you go in the world, people have got these folk songs or songs of their culture that go right back. They've known them all forever. So they know how to sing. They drop straight into them straight. And we've got Waltzing Matilda and, you know, Timey Kangaroo Dance. But, I mean, really, you know, we don't have, with our history, of course, that kind of legacy. So I started writing songs back in 77, 78 for the Nimbin Folk Club and the people that we had there who later became the Nimbin All-Stars, and we toured down to Sydney, that had words that were so simple you could learn them there and then, like peace, peace, peace. Peace on earth, peace, peace, peace for all the universe. Let's go. Peace, peace. And everyone would be happy because they knew the words. They weren't going to make a fool of themselves. So we had instant choir music I started to develop, which I combined with the Pete Seeger technique of getting everybody to sing. So now we had stuff where we were actually making it up as we went along. And that become... So that element came all the way home to roost at Bentley. You know, in the mornings there, sometimes I'd just make stuff up because that's what people wanted, you know.
Yeah.
I wrote the Simo Blues one morning, and we all got off on that, and it became a requested song. And we got hold of songs like Swing Low Sweet Chariot, and I looked over Bentley, and what did I say? Just anything that would work to get people into into that communion of voices together, you know. So, yeah, and I mean, I've travelled back to my roots in Ireland. I've done a lot of island hopping in the Pacific and that, and Asia too. You get a really good look at how music fits into those societies on a way that's totally natural and part of everyday life, and doesn't have any of the connotations that our music here has. Whatever, it's just part of what people do. So we had that at Bentley. It was part of what we did. It was always there were people playing music.
What do you think about Bentley for the future? Do you think it's over?
Well,
is it lost? I mean,
in my heart of hearts, I don't believe it's lost. And I didn't believe the police were going to come either.
Yeah.
Although I took on some of the anxiety when we'd be told that there were 900 and there were going to be horses and they might bring a water cannon, and you know, fear mongering went around stuff. And you sit there and you think, oh shit, you know.
Mm.
But you're there and you're committed and you know there'll be lots of other people and the odds of you being hurt are pretty low. But I mean, it's all there. And we were told in the long run that the police didn't want to have any casualties, and so they sent the decision back to the minister.
Mm.
And he didn't want to make that decision either. Apparently he's about 30 years old. So I think that still stands. I don't think Matt Gaskell will get the police support this time around, and they can't do it without it. They can't sneak in because they need a DA. So you know, I think there's a lot of bravado going on because the shares are 0.049 or something rather narrow of a cent, you know. They're just like down the hole, and they may be getting Chinese money interested in them, and who knows. But I don't think we're finished with gas mining in this area, but I would like to think that's the end of Bentley.
Well, I'm pretty pleased for your boy's opinion and your report. It was lovely. Thank you very much, Mox.
You're very welcome, Martin. Oh.
Was my friend until I caught you in my bed. Lord, you're digging my potatoes, you're tramping on my vine. Got a plan, pretty woman. Lord, put it resting on my mind. Well, they're digging my potatoes and they're tramping on my vine, taking all my organic wine. Whoa, they're digging my potatoes, tramping on my vine. I got a plan, pretty woman, hey, Lord, it's resting on my mind. Well, now east is east, west is west, you're the one that I love the best, though, you dig in my potatoes, tramping on my vine. I got a plan, pretty woman, ho, loaded, resting on my mind. Brother Barry, take us away. West is west, yeah, boy. You're the one that I love, love the best. Oh, you're digging my potato, tramping on my vine. Got a plan, pretty woman, hey, and it's resting on my mind. One more time now. Someone's been digging my potatoes, tramping on my vine. Steal my washing from the line, I don't believe it. Yeah, they're digging my potatoes and they're tramping on my vine. I got a plan, pretty baby. Oh, oh, Lord, it's resting. Yes, it's resting, 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 resting on my. Good evening, Barry. All right, that was the song with Barry. Thank you very much, Barry. You're all welcome, mate. Okay.
So, I hope you enjoy this little laid-back local audio piece from people in the movement around Nimbin, Australia. This was Kaput Radio. I'm Martin, and hopefully this show was entertaining and representing a little of the local activist scene. Catch you again next time.